Welcome to Everybody Can, a conversation about volunteers and volunteer opportunities in Jefferson and Clallam counties. I'm your host, Missy Nielsen, career counselor and community volunteer. Our show is inspired by the words and spirit of Dr. Martin Luther King, everybody can be great because everybody can serve. We bring you information about the people who volunteer, serve on boards, donate, and sometimes just show up to help build what King called a beloved community. Now, today, we hear from the folks at the Gateway Visitor Center that the most common question that's asked is, where's the next restroom on my route? This essential need is known to all of us, much like death and taxes. Restrooms and toilets, an essential aspect of hygiene and health. The folks we're talking today advocate for toilet availability as a human right. Through education and advocacy, FLUSH, an acronym for Public Hygiene Lets Us Stay Human, consults with local governments and groups to provide equitable restroom availability, prepare for sanitation disasters, and recently is focusing on the linkages between our local housing challenges, public hygiene, and sanitation justice. Carol McCreary, co-founder of FLUSH, joins us today to help us better understand the plumbing behind the effort to bring this topic to the forefront of our community discussions. Carol, welcome to the program today.
Oh, thank you so much, Missy. I'm so happy to be joining you.
You, of all people. Now, folks and listeners, Carol is a friend of mine, and I can't think of anyone better equipped to handle a topic that can be a little bit awkward, if you will, FLUSH. FLUSH, would you tell us once again the acronym meaning and give us a little bit of a background on how you got involved with FLUSH, why it got started?
Well, public hygiene lets us stay human. So that's the raison d'etre. We started out in 2005 in the Old Town Chinatown neighborhood of Portland, which is the historic Skid Road and the home to all the social services, where there are lots of people, tourists, people, unhoused people, and all sorts of people. And there was a terrible, terrible lack of public restrooms. So we started out as a project of our neighborhood association. And then very soon, the next year, 2006, Mayor Tom Potter realized that there was a problem and pulled together a task force and invited us to join. In fact, three of our co-founders had votes on a committee which also benefited from a budget surplus that year. So we were able to allocate some money to fix up some restrooms. We fixed up an old comfort station that was nearly a century old and a restroom in a parking lot. And then we had a young man from Architects Without Borders who we asked to work on a self-standing restroom that would fit a parking lot.
And so you were in a region in Portland that was densely populated. It had the unique needs of tourism and homeless, sheltered folks, all the wide variety. And you're saying there's a shortage of restrooms in that location. Fast forward, you were invested in this organization and carried your involvement here to Port Townsend when you moved here. Is that correct?
Yes, we're still working on the public restrooms, but fortunately, they're pretty good here. There are about 70 in Jefferson County, and we track them, and we're coming out with an interactive map in the course of this year. But we've really been excited about working with the Department of Emergency Management on in 2014 on introducing a twin bucket emergency toilet for household preparedness.
Well, I'd like to dive a little deeper into that subject in a wee bit. I'd like to circle back, but FLUSH also has an impact in not only making sanitation public restrooms available, but you've got the disaster preparedness component. And then the other aspects of this organization, what else are you called to do? You consult. You've got kind of a broader reach than just making sure toilets are looking pretty. And, you know,
yeah, well, we put together a public restroom advocacy toolkit to get people comfortable talking about what we don't talk about, and to get and to line up citizens behind their elected officials so they will actually go out and see that they appear in our common shared space. We've had the opportunity to work with public officials in Washington, D.C., and lately in Calalum County and Port Angeles.
That's a spectacular, you know, and Flesch also, you know, tell us a little bit more why Flesch is important from those three perspectives we were talking about. One, you know, the public nature of restrooms. Two, for those that don't have as much access. And three, the emergency component. So why is Flesch important to have as an organization in a city or a community?
People need to be able to meet their essential biological needs when they're away from home. That's part of the way communities are built. And we have lost a lot of our public restrooms. There's been a huge shortage, and it's time to bring them back. And I think the new generation, fewer people out there buying cars, more in transit, more downtown living. It's very much an urban issue and an issue of urban planning now. And we just want everybody to start noticing it and working for it.
You know, we talk about the basic right to health care, right? And this is within that subset, the basic right to be able to have a hygienic way to relieve yourself, and how distanced they are, how the messaging they have. You know, what you mentioned about the decrease of public restrooms was certainly highlighted with our season of COVID closures, where in the world, you know, now you're on the ferry and you don't get out, and where in the world do you find a restroom? And it's pretty striking if you were to intentionally go look for public restrooms, how far apart they are. I didn't realize the shortage until we faced that through COVID.
Yeah.
You mentioned collaborating as an organization to talk to others as they decide that, oh, we've got a shortage. You know, toilets are like streetlights and curbs. You consulted with the Clallam. Your organization consulted
with Calalum Transit, mm-hmm. and also the city of Los Angeles, of Port Angeles,
and
they came together, a whole group of officials, and one of the city council members who also heads transit, Lindsay Schromer Warren, he put it all together, and we did the waterfront, and we looked at every opportunity to bring new toilets to the Gateway Transit Center and where they should be so that there are eyes on them, so that community surveillance works and keeps them safe. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at the 40-year-old toilets and what might be done to them and which locations would work, and just sort of problem solved. It was great fun.
So as an expert on toilets and restrooms, walk us through a restroom tour, if you will. So you're visiting with a group or a committee, and they're determining whether or not they're going to put in a public restroom. What are the things you'd be looking at from the start?
City officials often get the word from the people who clean restrooms about how horrible they are. Mm. And so the dangers, what they're looking at right off the bat, is safety and deterrence to vandalism. So we run people through an exercise called CEPTED, Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design. Hmm. We walk around, we see where are the places people can hide, what is not safe, where are people going to hang out around the restroom to create a space which is attractive. Or do you have a negative attractor that is going to bring the wrong kind of person hanging out there rather than just using it and moving on?
So safety is something you look at. Now, one of the things I noticed in visiting Portland and other cities too, I've seen toilets where the feet and legs are visible. So, you know, it's the design of the toilet for the safety. But you are also talking to folks about the frequency or the distances or the numbers of public toilets they need to have within a certain like geographic range. Is that something that comes up with your restroom tour advising?
No, yes. In Old Town Chinatown, we got it down to an 8-minute walk facilities. And I know in Beijing during the Olympics, the other Olympics, it was five minutes between facilities. Sounds nice.
Yes, and I have more questions for you on that topic, but checking in with our listeners, if you're just joining us today, we are talking with Carol McCreary of Flush, Public Hygiene Lets Us Stay Human, the need for restrooms and sanitation in public spaces and how it impacts our communities. Carol, on the topic of public restrooms, you've been advising folks as an organization, but you also work on emergency sanitation and, you know, referencing the local, the large type of cities versus smaller, your urban and rural. I bet you see some contrast in both of those topics. So do touch on what your work is informed by in our more rural location versus the larger cities? And then let's dive into that disaster sanitation.
Well, we've been focused on the Cascadia subduction zone and this earthquake that we are more or less expecting within the, you know, we're in that 350-year period between these events. And they're going to break pipes. And they will break pipes not only of our sewered sanitation in our cities, but also in on-site systems in rural areas. So toilets won't work. So what are you going to do? You can't just let that stuff flow out into your neighborhood. It needs to be contained safely. So the twin bucket emergency toilet wasn't our idea. We discovered it in 2011, right after the earthquake in New Zealand. And we called up the Permaculture Guild down there. And we said, oh, my gosh, this makes so much sense. Twin buckets, one for poo, one for pee. Keep them separate. And you control the volume. And you control the odor. And you're keeping those pathogens contained all the time. So the risk of disease spreading during a catastrophe is limited.
Indeed. And for us in a more rural location, we're looking at perhaps longer timelines. So you do have to be managing that kind of household function with disaster sanitation. I'm not sure people really understand how little it takes to have that whole system upturned. Talk a little bit about this component of a disaster. If our sanitation goes, what are we up against? What are we looking at in a kind of a classic catastrophic event, if you will?
Well, Christchurch, New Zealand is what taught us a great deal, because in their system, only about 5% of the infrastructure went down. All you need to do is to break a lateral here or a main there or a pump station or take out some of your waterfront treatment plant. And the entire system comes to a halt.
5%. That's astounding.
So that's what we're up against if our system breaks. Everybody needs their backup buckets.
You know, I noticed there is a shortage of information on disaster planning when it comes to this aspect. We learn how much food and how much water and, you know, shoes by the bed and all those strategies. But I am really surprised that this component only came into the mix in 2011. And you as an organization in the past have been speaking on this aspect at our county picnics. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, we've always had a booth there. And also NPREP. We work, of course, with NPREP and The how-to on the twin bucket emergency toilet is right in the library of the DEM, of the Department of Emergency Management.
Well, would you mind giving us the URL for the easiest place one might find that information? I believe you also have it on your Flush website.
Yes, it's fine on our website. In fact, we encourage people to set up bucket brigades and go around each one teaching one, just like a bucket brigade putting out a fire. So just go to our website, look at the little magnifying glass at the top and type in twin bucket emergency toilet.
And your website is called...
Flush.org, www.phlush.org.
That is fantastic. Now, you know, often listeners checking in want to figure out ways to get involved. And with your organization, we mentioned briefly a component that is interconnected with other aspects of our lives here, which is our housing shortage and housing needs and income challenges. And you find yourself being invited into conversations there as an organization. Is that something you could talk a little bit about?
Oh, we're just really exciting that the Housing Solutions Network sort of felt that they needed to look at sanitation as a separate piece. Everything from finding proper facilities for tiny houses and tiny houses on wheels and people who are forced to live in their RVs to the cost of housing, of sanitation as a part of housing. So we are, they invited us to help in the formation of a sanitation hat. We've had our first meeting and a couple of activities are underway.
So this is something we should check back with you in a few months and find out more about, huh?
Well, they're great people to work with. We're very excited about this.
Carol, you know, I am just awed at how quickly this time goes. And we barely talked about some of these components. For example, we've got lots of folks with sanitation or septic fields that are also could benefit from the lens of Flush of finding solutions. So I look forward to having you back on. For those people who wanted to find out a way to get involved, could you give us an email or a phone number?
I'd love to talk to anybody. Well, I'm Carol, C-A-R-O-L, at flush.org. And on our website, we have volunteer opportunities. We love virtual volunteers, and our board will be putting up some new opportunities very, very soon.
Well, Carol, thank you again for joining us. We are out of time. I'm your host, Missy Nielsen, and thank you for listening in today. Our production coordinator and sound engineer is Taylor Clark. I'd also like to thank our programming manager, Larry Stein, and all of the incredible volunteers that work hard to bring eclectic music, local news, and compelling conversations such as these to the North Olympic Peninsula. Now go out, get involved, and think twice when you flush.